Robert's friends were used to this florid language. "Everything he takes up," Francis later observed, "he exaggerates." Paul Horgan, too, recalled Robert's Baroque tendency to exaggerate. But it was also true that he quit the lab job and spent the month of August back at Bayshore, much of the time sailing with Horgan, who had agreed to spend his vacation with him. In June 1925, after only 3 years of study, Robert was graduated summa cum laude with a bachelor's degree in chemistry. He made the dean's list and was one of only 30 students to be selected for membership in Phi Beta Kappa. Tongue-in-cheek, he wrote Herbert Smith that year, "Even in the last stages of senile aphasia, I will not say that education, in an academic sense, was only secondary when I was at college. I plow through about 5 or 10 big scientific books a week and pretend to research. Even if, in the end, I've got to satisfy myself with testing toothpaste, I don't want to know it till it has happened." Testing toothpaste was hardly a likely future for a Harvard senior who that year had taken such courses as colloid chemistry, history of England from 1688 to the present time, introduction to the theory of potential function and Laplace's equation, the analytical theory of heat and problems of inelastic vibrations, and mathematical theory of electricity and magnetism. But decades later, he would look back on his undergraduate years and confess, "Although I liked to work, I spread myself very thin and got by with murder. I got A's in all these courses, which I don't think I should have." He thought he had acquired a very quick, superficial, eager familiarization with some parts of physics with tremendous lacunae, and often with a tremendous lack of practice and discipline. Skipping the commencement ceremonies, Robert and two friends, William C. Boyd and Frederick Bernheim, celebrated privately with laboratory alcohol in a dorm room. "Boyd and I got plastered," Bernheim recalled. "Robert, I think, only took one drink and retired." Later that weekend, Robert took Boyd to the summer house in Bayshore and sailed his beloved Trimethe to Fire Island. "We took off our clothes," Boyd remembered, "and walked up and down the beach getting a sunburn." Robert could have stayed at Harvard. He was offered a graduate fellowship, but he already had loftier ambitions. He had graduated as a chemistry major, but it was physics that called him, and he knew that in the world of physics, Cambridge, England was more near the center. Hoping that the eminent English physicist Ernest Rutherford, celebrated as the man who had first developed a model of the nuclear atom in 1911, would take him under his wing, Robert persuaded his physics teacher, Percy Bridgman, to write a letter of recommendation. In his letter, Bridgman wrote candidly that Oppenheimer had a perfectly prodigious power of assimilation, but that his weakness is on the experimental side. His type of mind is analytical rather than physical, and he is not at home in the manipulations of the laboratory. It appears to me that it is a bit of a gamble as to whether Oppenheimer will ever make any real contributions of an important character, but if he does make good at all, I believe he will be a very unusual success. Bridgman then closed with remarks, not unusual for that time and place, on Oppenheimer's Jewish background. "As appears from his name, Oppenheimer is a Jew, but entirely without the usual qualifications of his race. He is a tall, well-set-up young man with a rather engaging diffidence of manner, and I think you need have no hesitation whatever for any reason of this sort in considering his application." With the hope that Bridgman's recommendation would gain him admittance to Rutherford's laboratory, Robert spent the month of August in his beloved New Mexico. Significantly, he took his parents with him and introduced them to his few acres of heaven. The Oppenheimers boarded for a time at Bishop's Lodge on the outskirts of Santa Fe, and then journeyed north to Catherine Page's Los Pinos Ranch. "The parents are really quite pleased with the place," Robert wrote with obvious pride to Herbert Smith, "and are starting to ride a little. Curiously enough, they enjoy the frivolous courtesy of the place." Together with Paul Horgan, who was back from Harvard for the summer, and Robert's brother Frank, now age 13, the boys went for long horseback rides in the mountains. Horgan recalls renting horses in Santa Fe and riding with Robert on the Lake Peak Trail across the Sangre de Cristo Range and down to the village of Calis. "We hit the divide at the very top of that mountain in a tremendous thunderstorm. Immense, huge pounding rain. We sat under our horses for lunch and ate oranges, and we were drenched. I was looking at Robert, and all of a sudden I noticed his hair was standing straight up, responding to the static. Marvelous." When they finally rode into Los Pinos that night after dark, Katie Page's windows were lit. "It was a very welcome sight," Horgan said. "She received us, and we had a beautiful time for several days there. She referred to us always then and afterwards as her slaves." "Here come my slaves!" While Mrs. Oppenheimer sat on the shaded wraparound porch of the Los Pinos ranch house, Page and her slaves went out on day-long rides in the surrounding mountains. On one of these expeditions, Robert found a small, uncharted lake on the eastern slopes of the Santa Fe Baldy, which he named Lake Catherine. It was probably on one of these long rides that he smoked his first tobacco. Page taught the boys to ride light, packing the bare minimum. One night on the trail, Robert found himself out of food, and someone offered him a pipe to quell the pangs of hunger. Pipe tobacco and cigarettes quickly became thereafter a lifelong addiction. Upon his return to New York, Robert opened his mail to learn that Ernest Rutherford had rejected him. "Rutherford wouldn't have me," Oppenheimer recalled. "He didn't think much of Bridgman, and my credentials were peculiar." In the event, however, Rutherford passed Robert's application along to J.J. Thompson, Rutherford's celebrated predecessor as director of Cavendish Laboratory. At 69 years of age, Thompson, who had won the 1906 Nobel Prize in Physics for his detection of the electron, was well past his prime as a working physicist. In 1919, he had resigned his administrative responsibilities, and by 1925 he came into the laboratory sporadically and tutored only the occasional student. Robert was nonetheless greatly relieved when he learned that Thompson had agreed to supervise his studies. He had chosen physics as his vocation, and he was confident that its future, and his, lay in Europe.